First, I would like to thank for the organizing committee for organizing this conference, and particularly to Isabella. And also, I would like to thank inviting me, though it's not clear whether this is an addition or a subtraction. Okay, so I'm going to talk on the large set S in the interval from 1 to n, such that we cannot solve x plus y is equal to z square. And this is a joint work with my student Talman Kalfalov. And one part is a little bit older, and then hopefully I will not get to the new part, because I actually don't understand it fully. But there's the audience willing to help out. Okay. All right. So, and also, I learned from Tim, you learn a lot of things from him, that you have to be adventurous. So he tried first time in his life, as he said, to use computer in the lecture. Now I will try first time in my life to give a reasonable lecture. Well, this is the last lecture, so, well, most probably nobody remembers the lectures anyway. The important thing that the whole thing is over. And then I don't want to disappoint you, but the point is that I have very rarely given a good lecture, so that I don't see how you can be disappointed. So the only possibility for us is a present surprise. Okay. So let's start to formulate the problem, and so the problem was to determine the large X set, and that from some long time ago, Erdős and I guess Moser, oh, that is the new thing, sorry, I still, that hardly I will use this very rarely, and then most of the time I will write on the board, hopefully it will be readable. Conjectured that the best example, if S is, sorry, a set so that n congruent 1 mod mod 3, then this is the best what we can achieve. And then you can see then the density of this is, so up to n we have one third of the integers. And then, to some great surprise, a Frenchman, well, it's not Messias, I write just for not having any confusion, the name, maybe I don't remember it, pronounce it correctly, came up with the following example. How can I get rid of, I have to put it here, thank you. Actually, I am not very good with these things.
You're doing beautiful.
Well, good, that encouragement is all, it really helps you to overcome difficulties. But maybe this is, but you can see. Actually, I am at the computer science department, and I am supposed to use these devices in addition to using the computer. But actually, in America, there is this magic word, the diversity. So, actually, what it really means is that, at least in my case, so they hired me because they had all the people who did know how to run a computer. And I was the only one who practically had nothing, no knowledge about it. And then that was the reason actually why they hired me. So they needed one person just to show the, yes, they are really not, how you discriminate against people who don't use the computer. Okay, so therefore if I will make some errors with this, then that is the reason that. By the way, I have never taken a picture, so. Alright. But then he come up with the example, which is the following. Then we consider all the numbers, which are congruent 1 mod 4, and then numbers which are congruent 14 mod 16, and the numbers which are congruent 10 mod 32. Now, if we consider it that everything is mod 32, then 1 mod 4 gives us 4 residue classes, then the second one gives us. Sorry?
The first time you got 8.
Good, great. That's good because otherwise, yes, the result would be slightly, yes, weaker than the already known result. So, actually, once you said it, maybe that is, maybe I can start a new school, then you should write papers which are by far inferior to any previous paper. So that actually would give you a lot of leverage. Sometimes actually I do it. Now, well, so it's 8, thank you. So it's 8, then it is 8, the second one is 2, then the third one is 1, so it's altogether 11. So we have 11 residue classes, and then you can check that, quite easy to make myself, but I have some, not a gift, I wouldn't call it a gift to make fool of myself, but it is just as it happens. All what I wanted to say, yes, that is 11, but also you can check that in this system, x plus y is not congruent z square. So the sum of any two residue class will not give you a residue class which is quadratic residue. So that is just an inspection. So of course if it's not quadratic residue, then in real life you cannot solve it. So if you cannot solve it locally, there is no solution locally, then there is no solution globally. Actually, that word I also used not so long ago, about 2 weeks ago, that it's very powerful, this local global, actually Peter Sarnak gave a lecture and the whole idea was then what is local and what is global. Well, so if you spend enough time at the right place and you learn the right words. The only question is how to use them in a proper context. Okay, so this doesn't have the solution modulo, so they don't have a solution, and then the density of the whole thing there, so S is of size 11 over 32 times N. So, and then 11 over 32 is bigger than 1/3, just slightly bigger than 1/3, and so then this beats Erdős's example. And then the question is, then what is then the truth? So what is this size? And then Lagariev, Udlitsko, and Scherer wrote a beautiful paper where they prove the following. If we don't consider a general S, but instead of that, we just, S is a union on finitely many residue classes. I mean like 12 or 20, it's independent of everything, just give a number, constant number, and then your S is a union of constant number of residue classes. Like here, S is a union of 11 residue classes. Of course, because then every set is a union of many residue classes. So now it's constant. Then, if this is the case, that we only consider that kind of S, that this is less, and it will not contain the solution of x plus y is equal to z square, then this is right. So, the message of this is that Messias example is the right, actually Messias example is a union of residue classes, and then one could say maybe you cannot do any better than residue classes. So Messias example is right if we restrict our attention only to the union sets which are union of residue classes. And also, well, when we will be there, we prove some other really nice theorems, which at the very last minutes we are going to use. Well, once I am here, that is also I learned that, of course, when you do prove something, then you better, yes, to use somebody else's idea, and then in computer science we call it black box. So the black box is something that you, when you have some problem, then you go to the black box, and the black box answers you the problem. So we will use this black box, namely another theorem of Lavarias, Odlyzko, and Scherer, but a little bit later. So first goal is at least to get the following thing, then if this conjecture we may not be able to prove this conjecture, at least we will be able to prove it in an approximate sense. So our first goal will be that to prove that if you give any delta and then an S will be always finite, although there is a formulation in an infinite form, then S is a subset of the interval 1n, and then the density is 1 over 32 plus delta, so meaning that the number of elements in S is equal 132 to plus delta times n, then it follows, then there exist x and y both in S, so that x plus y is equal to z squared. So the third step will be to prove that it is approximately, Messias' example is approximately correct. And then later, we'll have to work somewhat hard to get rid of the epsilon, and in fact to show that there is only one example, namely their example. If you are a little bit far away in some sense from this example, then your density will drop down. But most probably we cannot get that far, so I don't know, still we remember. I will have to use later this one and format with residue classes. So the proof actually will not contain any surprise. The proof will be rather standard. It starts with the usual thing that if you have two sets A and B, and SQ is for it stands for the squares. So then this 1 over 2, and I don't like continuous things, the reason because I don't understand, so I write everything in a finite form. So that this formula, one of it, well known by to everybody, then this formula actually expresses the number of solution that x plus y is equal to z square, where x is in A, y is in B, and yes, z square of course in SQ. So there is nothing to it. And then again, nothing is going to happen that how will you evaluate such a thing is that you break it into two parts. One is sigma 1. So of course every t over n can be approximated by a rational number, that is what they usually do, and then so t over n minus a b, t is there indicating that it depends only on t is less than p over q, and q is small. We will define later what we mean by q being small, and the remaining part where the approximation is such, approximation Tn is such that B is big. Okay. What is this? What is if something is wrong? The approximate, yes, then it is less than 1 over B times Q. Doesn't matter. Okay. It's just the usual, I don't know how it's called, Dirichlet approximation. Okay. Now, so there are, yes, some rational number can be approximated with smaller denominator, and some of them cannot. And that why we do this, because we know that if we consider sigma 2 where the approximation is bad, the denominator is big, then we don't have to care about this term because we use part-apart, so the second term is not big, and what we expect, yes, it is n to the 3 half, if A and B, let's say, positive density. Then we practically some constant mass 10 to the 3 half solution we expect if everything was random, A and B was random. But now, if we start with our set S, and instead of S is now A in that notation and S is equal to B, then we know then this expression is equal to 0, because now we assume then S doesn't have the solution. So then this expression is 0. So we start to compute what is sigma 1, but instead of that, we do a small trick, which is again an old trick. Well, if you don't have new one, then you have to go back to old ones, if you remember that. So the trick is the following. Then instead of the solution that x plus y is equal to z square, we will, for some reason which we don't see now, we will pick up a fixed composite, but very heavily composite number, like it is a product of small price on an appropriate power, and then we are going to consider the following equations, x plus j times m is equal to z square, where j will run, let's say, from 0 to n to the 1 minus epsilon. It's a pretty long range, n to the 1 minus epsilon, almost the whole range. And then what we expect, yes, and now we consider now the total solution. So x plus y is equal to z square. I should separate them so that y is the form of, let's say, y star plus j times n, where y star belongs to the original set S. So we now put together all the solutions. The philosophy behind this is that maybe this is hard to estimate. This is just one equation. And this is a, so therefore, in average we know by heart, then usually the problems are much easier if we want to solve them somehow averaging. Yes, there are many theorems which is not true, I don't know particularly, but then in average it is true. So if you average, definitely you are not worse off, and most probably you are better off. And notice, then this is a very nice set, this shifting set. It is a long arithmetic progression, yes, with small, because m will be a constant, and n is not, when m is just a big but constant number, and highly composite. And then, with some later, we will see, then the number of solution of that, total number of solution of that equation is what we expect. How much we expect? For a fixed C, we expect n to the 3 half times, let's say, some constant.
That is what we expect. If they were random, then this is the truth. And we have that many of that, so the total number of expected solution would be this delta times n 3 over 2 times n to the 1 minus epsilon. That we will do using some very elementary argument, and that is so that the proof will consist of two parts. First, then we will see, then if we consider this one of for some fixed g, this equation, and then of course then instead of s, the second one should be s plus g times m, because that is the current we consider the Fourier the transform of a s plus j times m, and then but then we will prove that practically the expression doesn't change at all. It will be about the same, close to zero with some error term. And then if it is close to zero, then the total number of solutions there is was close to zero, and then if you multiply this n to the 1 minus epsilon, the total number is much less than what we expected. The total number of solution of that kind of equation is much less than what we expected. Now, so, why? So first, let's start and to see then how we estimate in general let's just consider this one, that sigma 1, then the sigma is this equation, I forgot to write that sigma is equal to that long expression, sigma 1, where the approximation is good, that the denominator is small, and sigma 2 is the others. But if sigma 2, we can actually estimate sigma 2 quite well, because FSQ at some rational point which has a big denominator, then like if the denominator is P over Q, so S Q SQ P over Q, if Q is large, is less than the total number, which is n to the 1/2 the maximum, divided by square root Q yesterday. And then before yesterday you heard it, this is just a simple value sum, and that is an estimation of it. So the point is, then if you evaluate it at a rational point where the denominator is big, then you gain something. Then the whole thing is not the maximum, but rather divided by square root Q. Okay, so, then this one, we know that if the denominator is, let's say, bigger than some p, that sigma 2 is less than, so we just consider all the t over n when the approximation is such as that the denominator is big, let's say bigger than p. Then sigma, from this it follows, then sigma 2 is less than n to the 3/2, divided by square root p. It is just, again, you move it out and then use Cauchy-Schwarz. So that's the absolute standard thing. But then, because sigma 1 and sigma 2 is equal to 1, so from this it follows that sigma 1, which we cannot estimate, is less than also than n to the 3/2 over square root p. Yes, because their sum is equal to zero. That's all what we use here. Now, let's see that what happens let's see that what happens if we consider now this F, FQ, so we are in sigma 2, T over N, F, S, T over N, and F A, F plus J times M T over N. Now, what we can see is that because M is, now here we use that M is highly composite. So M is like, let's see, looks like the product of P I to the alpha I, where P I is less than some big prime P. So this is a highly composite number, and then now we try to estimate this expression. Now if, let me see, here I have the, okay. But then if you consider the things at the place P over Q, we want to estimate sigma 1, then what is the difference between, it is sigma 1, but I should say should write here G because it depends on J. And then we want to compare it with sigma 1. We know that sigma 1 is very small, right? We knew that it was n to the 3 half over square root p. And then you can see that there is no big difference between them, because if you take a rational number a over q, where q is small, then if you multiply it by, so this simply amounts to the thing that everything is multiplied by e to the g times m so you consider it t a times q. Yes? But instead of, it was 1 before that, now we add it to e g times m, so every term here we multiply it by this complex number, but because FPM is highly composite, Q divides M, so it doesn't change at all this term, yes? The sigma 1 will stay exactly the same, because we actually add the critical places, and in sigma 1, he had only, after the approximation, rational numbers with small denominator, and it doesn't count, you can multiply it with this root, so that if g times m is divided, so q divides g times m, then you haven't done anything, because then the whole thing is equal to 1. So that is why we needed a highly composite number, because we cannot control sigma 1, but we cannot at least say that if we shift by g times m, then sigma 1 stays the same. So sigma 1 j is the same as sigma 1. So, and we knew then this is very small. And the sigma 2 doesn't matter, because you use the Cauchy-Schwarz error, and then so you still have the error term here. So the message of the whole thing, then all of them, all these expressions, regardless what is J, assuming M is highly composite, this is approximately the same as the original one. This is approximately sigma plus minus an error term n to the 3 half over square root p. Yes, because m had a, if q divides m, then one of the largest times survives, and then so at least the denominator is ZB. So then we have a very small error term here. So then analytically, if I don't know whether it's called analytic expression, if we look at this expression and we modify it, namely we shift it, then this analytical expression practically doesn't change at all. The change is only n to the 3 half times square root p. You can check it. Because the dangerous part, where there are small denominators, doesn't matter, it is not sensitive to the shifting. So it stays the same, and then it's sigma 2, the Cauchy-Schwarz, we had the error term. Doesn't matter. So, but then altogether, the total number of solutions, for each of them, this expression tells us the total number of solutions, x plus y is equal to z square, where y is y star plus j times m. So therefore, the total number from this expression we can deduce, and the total number of solutions is n to the 1 minus epsilon, that many j's we have, it runs from 1 to the n to the 1 minus epsilon, n to the 3 halves, divided by, that is very important, square root p, where square root, where p is the largest, in the largest prime in this product. Okay. So, that is what we know. On the other hand, now we will prove that this is not true, that in fact, the number of solution is something like n to the 1 minus 3 times n to the 3 half divided by something square root much smaller number. This is, I understand, it's not the mathematical notion than p. So, like, divided by, I ran out of q. So, but q is a much smaller number than square root p. So, if we prove it, then this is obviously a contradiction. So, therefore, the original had to have a solution. So how do we get the solution? And here we have to use Odlyskov's results. So, Lagarieff, Odlyskov, and Scherer's result. Well, so we start our set S, and now we will now construct integers Q1, Q2, Q3, and so on, QL. At some point we will stop. So that Q1 is a product, just like M, with a product of pi to the alpha I, alpha pi is less than some prime p1, which is big one. Then Q2 is much smaller. Now we will choose a prime, so let's say 2p2, so that 2 to the p2 is at least p1. So much, much bigger. They are growing very fast. And then Q2 is equal to Q1 times product pj to the alpha j, so that pj to the alpha j is less than p, that was p1, p2. So we multiply by a below, this part is huge.
So you want to interchange p1 and p2 in the...
So P2 is the next one when we define Q1. So P2 is, no, you are right. So P2 is much bigger, yes, then thank you. Then 2 to the P1 is, how is it? So P2 should be much bigger than this one, or this one is the right thing, yes? Thank you. Yes, so they are very fast growing, this P. Sorry for that, yes, they are very, very, very fast growing. Now, so what we, after, so we construct these Qs, and then we would like, so what we would like is that we consider S, let's say, mod Qi. So we have the residue classes from 1 to qi minus 1, and these classes represent, these are the elements in S. So these are the residue class 1, 2, and so on. So the largest one would be n over q plus 1 n over q plus 2 n, so everybody understands. It's just mod q we consider s mod q I. Okay, so we have a qi residue classes. And these classes represent the elements in S, which are in S. And what we really would like, later we'll see, then this is somehow has a very nice property that now if you divide it so that now you consider qi plus 1, so now you subdivide this residue classes, so that, of course, qi, what is it, it's the right notation, qi, of course, divide qi plus 1, you can look at the construction, and even this ratio is very, very big, because qi plus 1 is much bigger, so then we divide them, in, now we consider S mod qi plus 1. And then, of course, then you will get these pieces. Then how many? So this will break into how many residue classes? Qi plus 1 divided by qi. So each of these residue classes, qi, will divide. This is just very elementary. And then what we would like that this qi is such, then if we consider most of these residue classes, that S is uniform in it, mainly meaning the following. Then let's say if the density of S here is, let's say, delta 1, then when you subdivide most of these residue classes, now qi plus 1, will have also density delta, or close to it, delta plus minus epsilon. So the density, most, at least epsilon percentage of this, 1 minus epsilon percentage of this small pieces, we have a density delta plus minus epsilon. So this means that they are uniformly distributed within a residue classes. So in the next step, yes, if for qi plus 1, then you don't change the density. If it was delta 1, then it will, sorry, then it will be delta 1 almost everywhere. And now, once we will have that situation, we will find such an I, then using Lagaria's Odlyzko and Scherer, you will see, then we are done, at least with the approximation. So the first things, why can we do? Now, at the present of team, I am slightly afraid to say, then we will do this density incrementation method, and then maybe then there is this Banach-Hahn reformulation of the whole thing. But now the density incrementation here is simply nothing else that so let's say mod qi, and then take the residue class j. Then the density of it is, let's say, delta ij, and take the square and summarize over j and divide it by 1 over qi. So this is just the usual, so the square, you take the square of the total densities. And then the density incrementation is simply nothing else, alright. Now let's subdivide it according to take everything mod qi plus 1. Then it simply means that every residue class for J will be broken into qi plus 1 divided by qi residue classes. And the density was this one. Now if the density is not evenly distributed, then this Cauchy-Schwarz gives you, then the sum of their square will be bigger than this square. And then so you will gain something. And you keep repeating because this total things is less than 1, there has to be an I, so that when you stop, then at the next step you get what you want. So that is just the very elementary density incremental argument. I mean, it's nothing else than Cauchy-Schwarz. Now, I don't know whether, well, Cauchy-Schwarz came before Banach-Hahn. I am just saying in chronological order. Am I right? Yes, most probably close to it. Okay, good. Thank you. So. So that is very, very, very elementary. It's almost standard. And once we are here, then now, if the density was equal to 1 over 32 plus delta, then when we consider mod qi, so this is mod qi, then what you could see, then there are three numbers, let's see, A, B, and maybe I should have more lines, and C, so that A plus B is equal to C square mod QI. That is that theorem. Yes, because we have more residue classes, well, in every residue class is the density. If the densities are less than 1, actually we have much more. Then even if the density is 1 at some end and some is 0, then we have that many ones where the density is positive, and also we can assume that if we subdivide them, then the density will stay the same. But nevertheless, so if we, and then we call them good residue classes, where the subdivision is good too, in every jet leaf. Then, so, A plus B is equal to, what is this? I cannot even, what is this term? It's square. Yes, C square. Well, this is not the usual C, right? It is a modified, yes, we shifted yes, this small T, so C square. So, that comes from this black box, yes, from Odlisko, Lagaria, Scherer, Srisat, yes, because we are over the critical density, 11 over 32 plus delta. So there should be a solution of that. Now, from this solution, we will create, and just using the, then they are equidistributed within this class, so we break all this C into small pieces, now QI plus 1, B into small pieces, and A into small pieces. Now, of course, here you will have square numbers, yes, because if it is a quadratic residue, then if it's a long interval, a lot of square numbers, actually you know how many square numbers you have. And then if this interval is long, don't forget this was n to the 1 minus epsilon, this interval, it was very low. So we divide then actually every small residue class, even to interval of length n to the 1 minus epsilon, then the number of squares are about what you expect. At least, the number of total number of squares here is at least square root n times now qi to the 4. Of course, much more, because it in every residue class, there is the residue class is quadratic residue, then you have at least square root n over q real squares in that residue class, but we don't care. This is a gross lower bound, so here in this residue class you have that many. And then this is now the end of the story, because then you just take here, because this is then take your 1, 1, and 1 here, but because you can shift, the only things what counts, then in this whole interval, how many squares we have, the total number of solutions. So if this is then x plus y is equal to this residue class, then in this residue class you have, in this small, the small piece of this residue class, you get all the squares as many times you could shift on it. But because we shift the length of the whole interval, so if we have here L square numbers, for instance, then if you fix here two numbers, x plus y is somewhere here, then how many times, how many solutions you have? L solution, because you can shift exactly to the squares here, because all the shifting is permitted, because j runs from 0 to n to the 1 minus epsilon. So we go ahead. So the whole idea here is, then we can get rid of the third set, namely the set of the squares. It doesn't have any, absolutely any rule. So the unpleasant factor is completely out. It is just averaging. And then, now you will see then the number of solutions, and if you add up for every possible choices, then the number of solution will be n to the 3 half times, let's say, qi to the 4. On the other hand, from the arithmetic, from these things, we got that the error is n to the 3 half times p. Now p is of course now the last, qpi plus 1, so we stopped at qi plus 1, so the largest time was pi plus 1, and pi plus was much, much bigger than qi to the 4th. So, but everything is measured whenever you stop with congruence, and if pi plus 1 was the cutoff, then your error is n to the 3 half divided by square root pi plus 1. But that contradicts to this, that we actually presented that many solutions. So if you put together these two things, then it's clear that actually I used up my time. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you again. It was beautiful.